Good afternoon. My name is Mariusz Ostrowski. As you can hear, probably already from my accent, I'm not from US, I'm from Poland. I'm part of Microsoft Consulting Services, and I'm UC architect responsible for Link deployments there.
Yeah, hi, I'm Danny Chung. I'm based in Hong Kong. We're in the same team from the UC Enterprise Communications COE team. So, okay, I'll let you start then.
Yeah, okay. So guys, welcome to our Link video technical deep dive session. We have an objective here of giving you an overview of video features, not all of them, don't worry, because there are many, but some video features. We'll select some interesting video features that are supported for Link 2013. We will try to explain really in deep those features, how they work, what are the underlying technologies, and what makes them so great, actually, right? That's the idea. So looking at the agenda, what we have here is we'll start with a really short introduction of what's new for video in Link 2013. We'll then select a couple of features, and then we'll just dive into them, initially really kind of like not that deep, but then we go really deep. And, you know, because you might be a little bit, you know, tired after all that deep dive stuff, then we'll finish slightly easier with the kind of like how to make sure that all these features will work great in my environment. And of course, we'll leave you some time for the Q&A at the end. And we would kindly ask you to withdraw the questions till the end unless you badly need to ask one. But we'll try to give some time towards the end for this. Now, are you familiar with the concept of geekometer? No? So these little things here are called geekometer. Let me explain very quickly. They will help you to understand the level of the content that we are now delivering, because we are not going to jump straight into like a troubleshooting or SIP traces. We'll get there. We'll start easily with like a 100 level session. It will be easy for you, for everyone. I'm sure everybody will get it. Then we'll go slightly more in a higher level session. In the next section. So I'm sure everybody will understand it. Then we'll maybe go slightly higher. Some of you might be kind of like, well, what these guys are talking about. Don't worry, we'll explain all that stuff. And then in the middle of things, we go really 400 for geeks, and yeah, well, I'm sure you'll get it, right? So the geekometer will help you to understand. We'll just dip the little thing at the beginning of this section. So keep in mind, this is not a full 400 level session all the time. We'll be kind of like going up and down. The intention, I can share that slide with you later on. It's like it took me 2 hours to build it. I'm so proud of it. And by the way, we should be starting the time. Thank you for that. So guys, we'll start, because this is a session about the video, we'll start with the video. So we'll run a short video. We are starting really easily, 100 level marketing kind of, you know, stuff. But I have a point. So let's roll the video.
Especially after lunch.
Especially after lunch. Oops, sorry, that's not a video yet. Come on, play it. That's a difficult thing with the. Oh, I'm sorry. I just need to play it. Why doesn't play?
Yep.
It seems like we are so close.
Wait, right there. Hold that.
Like this? I know that look. What are you thinking?
I think the answer's right in front of her face.
So like this?
Turn it to the left. No, the other left.
I like it.
Let's grab Joe and confirm the production timeline. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Dave. And Kate. Why am I not surprised?
I know. Well, we work well together. Oftentimes, we finish
each other's sentences. we made some changes, and we want to loop you on the proof of concept.
Sure.
Here is the prototype.
Okay. Guys, that's brilliant. You've solved it. And it won't affect production at all. Has Amy approved this?
Let's find out right now.
Thank you.
everybody. I'm looking at the results right now. It's perfect. Bye.
Good job, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Nice work, great book.
All right, guys, bye.
Okay, so I ran that video with a reason for you guys. The reason is I wanted to highlight a couple of points that I took from watching that video. So first of all, the video in Link 2013 hasn't been put in Link 2013 for the reason of seeing, well, that has also been for the reason of seeing you, but also for a reason of let me help you to do your job correctly. Remember that lady? She was kind of like showing some part to the other guy, whatever that part was. That's about the business applications of video. We want the video to enable certain ways of working if necessary, like someone needs to look at something really closely, designed together, of course. Then the second point is video is not just about the video. Video goes together with the whole collaboration story of Microsoft, and sometimes, alongside the video, we want to see what we are talking about and then kind of like go on design, and that's where the guys went on some PowerPoint, I guess, and they were discussing these little things about whether they should stretch that part of the fabric. Sometimes we need to have a kind of additional advice or additional approval, if you wish, from other people. That's also what the video is all about, right? But sometimes these people are not necessarily available always, like I cannot go to NextCube and ask, what do you think about that? I need to catch this guy, and I also, at the same time, I need to not just hear what he thinks, but also see what he thinks when he sees what I'm showing to him. So, and eventually, at the end, it's also about kind of like, we wanted to, with the video in 2013, we wanted to really kind of like enable human-to-human communication in terms of like a manager, when she sees his subordinates and they're all nodding, then she's okay with that. And by the way, before that she went on a call with them, she was making sure that she looks professional. Did you catch that? That was good, right? She was like, video preview, and like, I look good. So we implemented lots of features in video in Link 2013 to achieve these goals, because we think Link 2013 video is about the business communication anywhere with mobile devices, and it's about the confidence in the communication. That all requires lots of features that we'll be talking about. That's what we think. That's why we put them into the Link 2013, and that's why they are there. And now we are going to kind of like go slightly deeper, so our geekometer goes 200 level, meaning we are not talking about any more marketing stuff. We are going to slightly deeper. Now, there are various reasons why video in Link 2013 is so great, right? I mean, marketing books have lots of good slides about it. I'm going to pick two or three points, and I want to be diving on them. So one of the things is, like, we did this gallery view, right? Everybody more or less knows what that is, right? But lots of things that we implement in gallery view, like a smart framing, I'll be discussing that later, allows us to make a gallery view a great experience, a really gorgeous experience. I'm coming from the video world, traditional video world. I was working for one of the biggest video vendors in the past, and I started to realize the power of gallery view when I came to Microsoft. The second thing I would like to pick out is like the ability to control your video experience. We give the user a power to make sure that his video experience is great in terms of I want to see what I want to see. I can pick what I want to see. I can pin the user that I want to see at this moment, right? This is also one of the important things for the users. And also, I want to make sure that my projected image over the video is good, is professional, right? So these are lots of things. And also, we also finally wanted to extend the video experience to the mobile world, to the world of what I call nomadic users, those people who work from here and there, which is natural kind of things in Link, but also they don't necessarily always have the ability to leverage their desktop client. So basically, I'm talking mobile clients with the video, right? Now, there are lots of other reasons why there are lots of features hidden. We will be picking up. Before I pick up those features and dive into them, I would like to highlight certain things about the mobile clients, because there is kind of like sometimes misconception about the mobile clients. When we introduce them, lots of customers kind of expected that they Link mobile client, in terms of video, will be providing the same level of experience as a desktop level client. It's not the case. Obviously, because of many limitations, that Link client Link Mobile client has. The important point is it does still leverage the same mechanisms, and depending on the hardware platform, it might or might not provide you with the features. What I mean by that? Well, again, there are certain limitation capabilities. An example, I have two Windows phones. This is my business phone. This is my personal phone, which I bought. I'm not advertising Windows phones, by the way. That was meant to be a joke. Anyway, so they both can run Link Client, but video experience that we'll get from them is slightly different. It's going to be slightly different. Why? Because not only because of the screen size, partially, it's because of the resolution of this screen. This screen can provide me with a 720p resolution. This screen can go only up to 800 by, let me look at my cheat sheet. So it's 800 by 400. So this device, which is Windows Phone with Link Mobile Client, would not provide me 720p video feed because it cannot simply keep the 720p and display it here. Right? So there are hardware dependencies. We'll be discussing them deeper later on. But keep in mind that for Link Mobile clients, there could be a slightly different features implemented in them. And there are mobile client comparison tables on the TechNet where you can go to and see some of them. But in terms of video, there are more elements that need to be taken into account for this. OK, so let's move on. OK, let's now go slightly deeper. Geekometer goes 300, right? And here in this section, I will try to kind of like, I selected three or four features from Link 2013. I'm primarily focused now on the mobile, on the video client, sorry, on the rich client of Link 2013, PC-based client. And I'll dive into those features, and I'll try to explain. Well, I will not be explaining what are they, I guess, because I expect most of the people know what they are, but I will be explaining why we implemented them that way. And also, I'll try to explain to you how they are implemented kind of behind the scenes. And Danny will take us even deeper with some of them. So peer-to-peer video. Guess what? We have Link peer-to-peer video. Everybody, I guess, have seen it. I'm not going to do any demos here. I assume that you've been exposed to these kind of experiences. Basically, the idea is like it's easy to start, easy to use that kind of experience. Can go up to full high definition, of course. Now, there are certain things about how we implemented that, and let me go into these. So first of all, when it comes to peer-to-peer video, there are certain things that we allow the users. We allow the users to extend the video render window, right? The window in which we are experiencing video. You might think it's like an obvious thing, right? But it's not so obvious, to be honest. And then the rationale behind it, kind of like a business rationale behind it, is like during the period of the call, I might, as a user that's receiving the video, I might want to change my perception of the person that I'm looking at. If I really want to know what the guy means when he's saying something, I'll go full screen. When I'm kind of like more interested in like in my whatever email stuff on the site, I will just probably push the window, make it minimize it. What does it mean? It means basically that the video will fluctuate during the period of the peer-to-peer call, and that means slightly different bandwidths. But the important thing for you to catch at this point is that we try to make it as instant as possible. When the user stretches the window or goes full screen, if you experience that ever, you'll notice that there will be like a very short period, perhaps even less than a second, like half a second, when you see like an image stretched, which is not yet good, and then the image will adjust, and that will be it. That will be like your higher resolution video stream is now coming to you. There is a very important concept called a video source request, right? Hidden behind that, I'm always struggling with this acronym. Hidden behind that little thing, we implemented that, and Danny will get us much deeper into what the VSR is and how that works. But the point to catch is at this moment, we really make these changes fast. And that's important, because if I change the video resolution, I want to instantly see a better or smaller video resolution. OK. Another feature that I would like to describe is a video preview. I'm sure you know what the video preview is all about, so I'm not going to go really deep into that, what it is. Now, the video preview is about first of all, it's about me seeing myself, like in a mirror. And also, by the way, now I'm talking about how we did it. When we are doing the video preview, I'm not sure if you notice that if you raise left hand, then on a screen you are see like left hand. It's a mirror preview. It's not like what the camera sees. What the camera sees is a different thing, right? It's like reverted. It's important because we want to see like we want to provide the user the experience that allows them to be natural in terms of video preview. That's an important point, how we did it. Then we want to do it before video preview, before the call, in addition to during the call. It's kind of obvious that you want to have a video preview during the call because you want to make sure that the video camera in front which you are sitting is still capturing your image. But we also want to provide that before the call. Why would you want to see yourself before the call? Well, you've seen the video, right? She want to make sure she want to project the image. The manager want to project the image about subordinates that she is important, so she had to really look good. That's why we want to have a preview when you are kind of like placing call, like in a video point-to-point video scenarios. You want to make sure that when I'm sending a call, then I'm going to look good, right? So, and then during the call, obviously, you also want one. An interesting thing, we provide a video preview that you can launch not just kind of like autonomously, you can launch that while you are engaged in IM conversation with a guy before raising that level of the conversation from IM to video. And we also kind of provide the ability to, during the conversation, during the call, obviously stop the video if I, for some reason, need to step down a little for a moment from the room. So this video preview thing is kind of like very important. How we did again? We basically constantly get a feedback from, not the feedback, but the view. We get a stream from the camera, and if you hover over the camera button or the video button, you just get a preview, whether in a call or actually before the call, you get the preview, and during the call, you get it embedded as a picture-in-picture in the image. Similar when answering the calls. It's very important for me when I'm getting a call that I need to realize that someone is calling me on a video. Why would I need to do that? Because I might be caught in a situation that I don't necessarily want to be seen on video. You might get with lots of these situations. But the point is, again, if I want to project a professional business image for video, and we are talking business communication here, I want to be seen properly. And I want to be able to make a decision, kind of like a correct decision whether I go on video or maybe I go audio only, or maybe I want to actually accept that call on my mobile because I'm going to go away from my desk in a moment, right? So again, so we implemented that. How we did it, we did this little toast, right? That you can open, actually, if you go one step back in the animation, when I'm getting call from Thomas, which is my colleague, he's calling me on video, and I'm being warned by this little signal here that he's calling me on video. I go options here, and obviously, by that little simple thing, we have such a power, control in a user's hand for the video. It's very important for me to be in control of my video because then I'm confident. Remember, I was mentioning confidence for the video. Okay, so and then I go video, Thomas is smiling, I'm smiling, things are good. Same for the video gallery experience. Also, we are having these video previews. Important point here, how we implemented it. When we join the video, we join the gallery view conference, we don't necessarily start the video instantly. I'm going conference, my colleague Francois is on a video, I'm not, that's my photo, that's not me. You can see by the color of my hair, right? This is a photo taken a couple of years ago, right? And I can go preview here, right? And Francois is still happy, kind of happy because I'm still not on video. So I go video, now we are happy. He's surprised I look different. And yeah, I can still stop the video or leave the video completely. Power in a control of control of the video is in a user sense. It's very important for us. It's very important for the users. Otherwise, I'm not feeling good going on video. And yes, so that was about the video preview. You can think a very small feature and very unimportant, but for many people, it's important. And I think we did it right in LinkedIn 13. Now, I'm not going to go into what the color view is. I think everybody knows that, right? If you don't know what that is, let's go after a session and set up the link call. Now, what important for me is to explain to you how and why we implemented it. The gallery view, obviously, you know that the gallery view is about the five tiles, right? Up to five video tiles in a view. But the point about each of these tiles is a separate video stream that is being received from the senders, so other participants of the conference, provided that they want to go on video. But let's assume they do. And each of these video streams can be of a different resolution, can be on a different frame per second rate. And Jeff Schertz, who did a great session yesterday on a video, and especially in context of bandwidth, he also covers lots of these things in his session. So you might want to go to that session tomorrow. He's doing the session. I guess the symbol of the session is networking 305. And now, the way we implemented the gallery views also, the way we implement the gallery views, each of these video streams is switched independently by AVMCU. And the question is why we did it. Well, there are technical reasons for that. We wanted to have achieve high level of scalability of the AVMCU. So hence, you can say we've thrown lots of work on a client, because the client is responsible for encoding and decoding. But thanks to that, and these days we do have quite powerful clients out there, so that way we basically provide the ability to scale AVMCU to quite high level. And also, that basically means you are paying less for these AVMCUs. That's the idea behind that. That's what the marketing wanted to achieve, to be honest. That was meant to be a joke, another one. I'm not good with jokes, guys. I'm trying. Okay, so up to five tiles here, right? What's also important about these tiles is, well, you probably know the algorithm of the selection of who is going there to the active tiles, like we sometimes call it a standing row. It's not that feature that I think makes the gallery view great. It's the feature of ability to kind of like, I want to see this person. I'm referring to these specific features in the Link 2013 client, which are called video pinning and video spotlight. So these are kind of like people want to see lots of other people in the video calls, and that's what the gallery view provides based on active speaker preference, if you wish, or active speaker selection. But sometimes people want to say, I want to see this particular person. Let me give you an example. If I'm a manager and I'm about to fire people, I want to perhaps know exactly how be the direction of the person that I'm going to call out next, right? Bad example, but you know what I mean. All right, so guys, this is the video pinning. And what's behind the video pinning? How we did it? Well, basically, it's also about the VSR and VSRs and H.264, which Danny is going to explain in a moment. Because what we do then is just send another VSR to the AVMCU and say, even I don't see whoever right now, Johnny, I want to see Johnny. And then the image of Johnny is being brought to me from Johnny's Link client, because I'm video pinning Johnny's, even if Johnny was if Johnny was right here somewhere, I can hover over Johnny's image and pin him, and then his image will go to the first row, and the video stream will be started by the VSR request, which Danny is going to explain to you. Again, control over the video experience is in user hand. Every user can have his own unique video experience. And also, there's other ways of control. You can go speaker view, you can go video spotlight. Video spotlight is interesting way of experiencing Link. Like, I'm the boss. I want you guys to see me. So I'm going video spotlight on me. So we are not going to see each other. You are going to see what I'm going to tell you. For some people, could be important. Now, please do not understand me wrong. There is nothing wrong with managers. One of my managers is sitting behind there, so I'm smiling. So probably doing a good job here. Thank you, Joe. So so basically, there are lots of these features in Link 2013 client that make them great, and we thought them over, and we implemented them in a kind of reasonable way. And one final feature I'm going to cover really quickly, because I believe you had a chance to see the cropping in the keynote session. And if not, for those of you, or maybe I think you experienced that as well. For those of you who are not familiar with the video cropping, I'll just very briefly explain that. So basically, cropping or smart framing, because smart framing is official term for that feature. I don't think we use that very often. Sometimes even in the product itself, we refer to it as cropping. So these two terms kind of mean the same, although kind of, not necessarily. But the point is, if I'm point-to-point video call, I'm just seeing, so this is the image from the camera, like a camera feed, if you wish, right? This is the image that receiver of the peer-to-peer call receives. Okay, so what happens with Martin? That guy's first name of that guy is Martin. I happen to know him. He's a great guy. So if that's a peer-to-peer call, there is no cropping happening. So What's the cropping then? Okay, now Martin joins a multi-view gallery call, and I'm going to show you what is the experience of some other person when he sees Martin. Obviously, at this moment, like in a multi-view gallery, and I'm just showing you here what happens in that little single tile which was selected for Martin, right? It won't be the whole image as projected from the camera with this blackboard here and the window here. It's just this part of the screen. And then Martin is shown kind of like without the rest of the background. Now, let's assuming that Martin moves here. I don't have a good screenshot for that, unfortunately. So think Martin has moved here for a moment. Apologies for that. We forgot to take these screenshots. And now, see, Martin is closer to this blackboard here, right? Again, now, if he moves slightly to the other side, then the cropping window, as we call it, moves to this side because he's now right here. Think he's here. So he is here near the window. Now, the whole point about, and by the way, if there would be some other person in the room, the cropping stops because we see that there are two people in the room. That's important. We see two faces. Because that's how the before I go into how we implemented that, let me explain why. What's the rationale for smart framing or cropping? Basically, it's about the human-to-human communication with Link, right? It's about the ability to allow the person to focus on what is important, right? On the important part of the video feed, if you wish. And the important part is that's where the face is, because I want to see what's the reaction of that guy. And that's why we did the cropping. We kind of remove an important part of the background. Guess what? I'm going to say something different in 20 minutes or 30, but we'll come back to that. Now, the technical rationale behind the cropping is actually we have a limited amount of real estate on a screen, right? On a screen of my PC, I only have certain resolution. And if I need to fit these 5 tiles there, I need to have that space horizontally for these tiles, right? So if I cut a little bit, I can fit these 5 tiles on the screen. With the uncropped images, I could run out of the real estate, and my gallery would be kind of could be theoretically kind of shorter. No, we do the cropping. Okay, so shortly, how we did it, how we achieved cropping or smart framing. It's actually a combination, very interesting combination of technologies that we implemented in what's called media stack of the Link 2013 client. So the Link 2013 client, when the video feed from the camera is getting to the client, it's running certain algorithms that do face detection. And it detects where the face of Martin is in the whole image, which is typically 16:9, and then it selects this typically squared rectangle where the Martin's face is, and guess what? Well, by the way, if there were two faces detected, right, on the screen, algorithm says, okay, let's don't do cropping. But the point is, if we detect Martin, and Martin is on the right or left side of the image, then we kind of like create like a, okay, so this is where the Martin is, and we send that additional cropping info from the sending Link client to the receiving client. And the receiving client will just simply, when he's creating that tile for the multi-view gallery, he's just selecting this part of the video stream. So there is no special new resolutions, squared resolutions for that. We are not doing anything unstandard, except we are kind of on top of standard video stream. We are adding additional information saying, this is the Martin. This is Martin. Martin is there. And then the receiving side can simply select and display it. OK, so there are some exceptions. Like exception is the Link Room system. Link Room system kind of doesn't do cropping. The intention is, if the camera of Link Room system is looking at the whole screen, at the whole room, right, then I assume that in the room we have multiple people, and we don't want to crop that image. So effectively, in fact, what we do is we are sending the cropping info, except the cropping is not rectangle, it's not square, it's rectangle. We are saying to the other side, that's a cropping thing. That's the whole rectangle that you should be displaying to the other on your screen. So lots of interesting technologies that we put there, lots of intelligence to achieve what I was talking about, to make sure that someone is properly seen without the distraction of the background. And by the way, there are some cases where you might want to show the background, kind of like enforce, I want to be seen with this background behind. Like, give me an example. So there's a president sitting in a chair, and there are a couple of advisors sitting behind him, but they're quite far away, so the face detecting algorithm is just detecting the president. Now, in some cases, we might want for the video feed of the president to show that he is with his subordinates in the room, right? So that will you, then where you might go here and disable cropping for the meetings. All of these technical features are being powered by two or three technologies underlying that Danny is going to explain to us. There you go.
Thank you. Thank you, Marish. So Marish showed you all these wonderful features, right? And I'm going to show you the underneath technologies that enable some of the features that he talked about. First of all, we talk about what kind of video codec that we will support, right? In Link 2013, we introduced the support of H.264, including the AVC and SVC. I'll talk about the difference. And, well, I'm not going to tell you how to do the encoding and decoding. That's not my job, and probably not very relevant to all of you. We also will do backward compatibility with RT video because we still have to support all these Link 2010 clients, right? One thing is that we deprecated the H.263 codec that Link 2010 supports. So that's some changes. With H.264 is a very rich spec, and it has like 21 different profiles included in there. And in this release, we are implementing the constraint baseline, which is most common for all this conferencing and the mobile applications that we use that profile. And then we also included the constraint high profile. For interoperability, Microsoft is a member of the a founding member of the USIF, and we also follow the spec that USIF produced, which is we implement the UC mode 1 and mode 0, and I'll go deeper into what they are. Although you would say, okay, wow, great, you support from the standard AVC, SVC, that means I can plug in any AVC endpoint, now I'll be able to talk, right? That's the same as saying, okay, my phone supports G711 and SIP, and I can talk, any phone can talk to each other. That's not true, right? Because each one still has some kind of difference in terms of the signaling. So, that you still have some kind of interrupt, gateway or something, and we did introduce the video interrupt server. It will be coming, right? So it will help you to interrupt with that. So why do we do SVC? Why do we do SVC? Well, Marius introduced this, gallery view, right? And give you the flexibility of viewing different kind of video streams. SVC help us to do that, right? Because we can actually allow you to produce different temporal scalability frames. And I'll go deeper and see why actually SVC will actually facilitate to do the multi-gallery view and allows you to do dynamic layouts, right? So it enables you to send multiple simulcast streams, right, of different resolutions. Also, SVC is a standard base, okay? SVC is specified in the H.264 NXG. Okay, so it allows us to make use of the graphics accelerators so that you can enable your desktop to do 1080p rather than buying a very expensive camera to do the encoding and decoding, right? So those are some of the reasons that we want to do that. Now, again, we still support RT video as a legacy support, but for all the Link 2013 clients, H.264 SVC is a preferred codec in terms of video, okay? So in the USIF video support model, the config modes, they define like mode 0 to mode 3. It has different capabilities. We support mode 0 and mode 1, okay? And what are they? In mode 0, basically, it is the AVC mode. So in this diagram, you see that the I and P. So I means in terms of iframe. It is the major video frame. It has all the information, the first frame, and then the P is like a, it's a delta, right? Every other, if you have like a 30 frame per second, so every 130th second of the time, it will put the delta in there so that you can add on top of the iframe to render the screen for the changes. So this is the Mo zero. That's what most AVC codec will support, right? And we also support something called SVC Mo one, right? This one actually it will do like a multi-layer hierarchy to encode the different frames. Suppose you're asking for 30 frames per second, okay? So instead of putting everything on the 30 frames per second in the P frame, right? We put a multiple layers. The layer zero, we encode it 15 frames per second, right? Every 15th second, I put a delta in there, okay? On the layer one, I also put a 15 frame per second in there, in the P frame. So together, if you understand SVC, right, your codec understand SVC, I can combine these two layers into 30 frames per second, right? So what happens if my codec does not understand SVC, okay? Since SVC is also part of AVC spec, it actually allows you to do that. If you have an endpoint that doesn't understand SVC at all, it doesn't know what this layers are, right? So actually, it allows you to do that. Let's take a look at this one, right? This one is a big stream structure for 15 frames per second, 180p. So you can see that in here you have a iframe, okay? So that's very important. You don't want to miss, right? So and then there's some field called priority ID, and TID is the temporal ID. Temporal meaning frames per second timing, right? So TID 0 means layer 0. So layer 0, all these frames. So each one, so I'm asking for 15 frames per second. So I'll send half of it in one layer, so which is 7.5 hertz, right? 7.5 frame per second. I'll send that. This is this frame, this frame. And then on the next 7.5 frame, I will put it into the layer one, right? So for a SVC decoder, it will understand, okay, I will do this, I'll do this. And also for example, if I have two receivers, right? One is on a very good connected link, and I can actually do 15 frames per second. Another one maybe on a 4G network, I can only do 7.5. Then actually the AVMCU, right? I receive this structure. I can say for the desktop client, I can send all these frames to the desktop client, and he can combine these two layers to form a 15 frame per second. And then on the other hand, if the other receiver is on mobile, and the AVMCU will say, okay, I'll only send you the base layer, the layer zero, and he will decode it into the 7.5 frame per second, right? It's easy because then in that case, the AVMCU does not need to do encoding and decoding. It just need to switch one layer. Give you this layer, give you this layer. If you can do both, I'll give you both layers, right? Now, my question before was, what happened if I have a AVC decoder? He doesn't know anything about SVC. What you do is, you still send all this to him. The AVC decoder would not understand what priority ID or TID is. He simply ignores it, right? But he get all the information. He get the iframe, he get the P frame every 7.5 of 1.75 seconds, right? So he combine all this information and he form a 15 frame per second stream. So that's how great it is, okay? So and since this session is at 400 level, if I keep just talking like that, you guys will say, well, this doesn't match my expectation. So I have to do some scenarios. People told me that you need to go to, put some trace in there. You need to put the PowerShell command in order to make it 400 level. So we will do that. So three scenarios, right? Calls between Link 2013, calls between 2013 and 2010, and then call between 2013 and mobile. So I want to explain the what you would see when you do STP exchange, right, to set up the call. And also during the call, you know, if I ask for a different resolution, what would I do, right? What do you expect? How does it work? So case one, Amy is calling Gareth at ASGV, and they are both Link 2013. And you can see the fact that, you know, Amy is 2013 because the version, the user agent is a 2013 client, right? So this is a simple SIP message, invite header, nothing special. So what's special is in the SDP. So I'm only showing the SDP of the video part, right? So what's highlighted here is, okay, the M line. Now in Link 2013, the difference is that now we support payload type 122, which is H.264. And we also support RT video for better compatibility. We also support something called, you know, ULP FEC. It's an uneven level protection of using FEC, right? So that only happens on the Link 2013 client to protect the video codec, right? It's not a codec. It's just a way to do FEC. Okay. We continue to provide you the in terms of RT video, we provide the capability. A list, right? All the list here, and the RTP map, right? And we support, you know, the multi-session mode. And there's one more line I will explain later, but keep in mind there's one more line. So regular SDP, but there are extra capability that we advertise, okay? So that's during the setup time. What about between Link 2013 and Link 2010, right? How is it different? So one thing is that, okay, the client is using Link 2010, you can see from the version. So in this case, LC, which is Louis, he is using a Link 2010 client, right? So nothing special here. So how about in the SDP, right? So the top one is the Link 2010 client SDP for on media part. Video part, right? He only support payload type 121, which is RT video, right? And he advertised his XCAPs, his capabilities, nothing else, like the RTP map, right? Very simple. On the Link 2013 side, right? Originally, he was also advertised 122, 121, and 123, but this is the final offer, right? So he narrowed down because, okay, the other side only support, you know, RT video, I agree with you, I'll give you my capability of 120, like RT video. He's advertising his capability. So what's the difference here? There are a lot more, you know, resolutions that we will support with, you know, H.264, right? We will put in there, even though, you know, RT video probably not done. And also RTP map for the RT video, so we'll put in there. So this is the SDP exchange for between 2013 and 2010. Now, the third case is mobile. So how would that be different, right? Actually, I want to show you that it, you know. So first of all, it's coming from UCWA. Right, because mobile is going using UZWA to do the signaling. So that's approved, and that's from me to my WinPhone 8 client. And this is the mobile SDP, that from the mobile client, the SDP. Same thing like the desktop client, it advertises different codecs that it supports, XCAPs and RTP map. One thing you can notice, right, you know, It is like very similar to this desktop client because we are implementing the same media stack. It should be the same, right? One thing different is I want to point out that this mobile client is advertising I'm only supporting up to 6x4, which makes sense, right? I mean, most the client only support up to 6x4. I don't see any 1080 client support yet for this. So with that, that's the core setup, right, on the SIP SDP exchange. But what's next I want to show is that Mariusz mentioned something called video source request, right? It is a RTCP extension that we implement to allow us to do fast switching of video stream, right? Whether you're asking for different resolution, different frame rate, or something like that, right? So it enabled the receiver to ask, okay, what do I want? I want the, you know, the media source from this active speaker. I want to change my resolution if I, you know, expand my video to full screen, or if the bandwidth change, right? And then the sender would be able to quickly react, because if I have to, say, switch the stream by renegotiating the SIP session, that's too late, too slow, right? And so the RTCP extension, it allows you to really quickly the sender say, okay, I get all this information, this receiver want this, this receiver want it, and it will decide, okay, what's the best resolution I should send you, right? So this is what it's trying to achieve. So let's look at it. Remember in the previous example in the SDP, we have one line that I would say I will go over that. This is the RTCP FB. FB meaning feedback. It's a feedback message extension from our implementation. From the send side, it supports the SRC and XPLI. SRC meaning it's the video source request, and the PLI is a picture loss indication. Actually, though, these are actually the picture loss indication is a from the from some standards as well, right? One thing to notice is that Link 2010 client does not support this. It does not use this mechanism to change the resolution, ask for different resolution. It's actually using another extension of RTCP. It's the profile specific extension. So you will only see this line from the Link 2013 client. Okay? So this is how you signal the other side. Okay, I can support this. I will use this to request for the change of stream. Okay? See, I'm Asian, so when somebody picked me a picture. So. So I want to go deeper into the VSR message. But before I do that, so when I try to decode it, it's a bunch of, you know, garbage. I cannot decode it because, well, it is garbage. We encrypt it so that it looks like garbage, right? The bits, right? So now we need to, if you use NetMon, capture the stream, and you look at RTCP, there's no way I can understand it because it's encrypted. Which is good, we like it, right? So in our lab, what you need to do is to set the media config to, you know, do not support encryption. That will disable the encryption on media and as well as RTCP, okay, so that you can look into it, right? So now we have one PowerShell line in here. It kind of come to 350 level, right? So, and then you use NetMon to capture the message, and what you want to do is that you want to filter it through the packet type 206. It means payload specific, right? Now this is 400 now. I get this stuff. So RTP message, payload type 206, right? I filter on that. And the meat of this message is in this feedback control information. And you look at it, it still looks like garbage, right? It's all the bits. So I'll decode it for you. So decoding it, if you look at our, we publish all our protocol in our protocol spec, right? If you go to MSDN, you see all this thing. It's not secret. If you want to interrupt with us, just look at it and you can see what it is and interrupt. First thing you will see is the VSR header, right? It's feedback type 1, that means this VSR header. The length, the total length of this packet. Request media source ID. This number means source any. I'm showing you an example from peer-to-peer, just to simplify it, right? But in the case of like a conference, that would not be source any. You will actually ask for that particular media source, right? It doesn't make sense to give me any media source, right? So it will do that. Request ID, the first request ID reserved, and there's a bit in the last bit, it's a K bit, it means a keyframe. So in this message, it's asking for the keyframe, like the iframe, right? The important one. This packet has two VSR entries, right? Why two VSR? We have the VSR entry for H.264 request, and we have a entry for the RTV as well, because they support both, right? So it has two entries in there, and each entry has 68 byte, okay? So this is the header, and what's following the header is the VSR entry, so what it's asking for. And if, in this case, because it's peer-to-peer, it's only asking for one sender, right? If you are, we are sending this directly to the sender in the peer-to-peer case. But in the conference case, the receiver actually send it to the AVMCU so that the AVMCU can aggregate all these requests, right? And then send it to the sender, right? So, okay, sender, you have so many requests and they have different resolutions. Okay, give me all the streams that you have. So in the conference case, what you will see from the AVMCU is that you will have more entries in here, up to 20 entries in one VSR packet, right? Then they can send out the packet if they have more. So, but in this case, I only have the peer-to-peer to show in as an example, okay? Now, the entry. The payload type is the codec, right? 122, we know it's H.264, and we support UC config 1, that's the proof. And it's asking for a ratio of bit mass of 1, which is a 16 by 9, and it's asking for some maximum width and height, right? So, okay, maximum, I can support this. And 432 is a strange number, because in all the supported resolution, it's like 424 by something, not 432. We're sending this because it's a rounded number of a multiple of 16, okay? But the sender will not send this special kind of resolution. It will actually match the supported resolution to send, okay? Bit rate, it's asking for this bit rate, whether the sender will actually send this. We don't know, because there are different considerations for the sender to take into before it sends the stream. Frame rate, very important. I'm asking for 15 frames per second, right? So this is the entry, and then the next entry would be the RT video, and I'm not going to show that. It's similar, we're asking for the same kind of width and height. Now, this is the default message when I open up a video conversation, the default screen, right? Now, in this test, I actually blow it up to full screen, right? So if you suddenly enlarge to full screen, as Marish said, you know, at a short in time, you probably still have this old resolution and it's stretched to the full screen, but immediately it got switched to the you know, screen size that you have. So what do you get is, actually it will send another VSR request. I said, I want this new resolution. So this is the new VSR. I'm not going to go through the header because it's the same, similar, but the entry is different. Same thing, the payload type, config mode. I'm still asking about 16 by 9, but look at the width and height. It changed to 960, right? And it's asking for 2 megabit per second. And it upgraded to 30 frames per second. So that's immediately that we can ask for this. And since this is just like a RTCP message, I don't need to renegotiate SDP. It allows the receiver to quickly ask for a new thing, and it allows the sender to quickly respond. Say, okay, somebody asked for a new resolution, now I'll switch, right? So that is why we pick the SVC to implement, right? And also to facilitate like a multi-view gallery, to facilitate video pinning, right? When somebody pin another person, right, rather than the active speakers, that receiver can say, okay, hey, give me this. And then the sender says, okay, you want this, I will give it to you, right? So this is very important. And so what would happen is, what happened if you in the middle, there's some, you know, your network link change, right? The bandwidth change, how does it react to it, right, the medium? Now, we use RTCP-based bandwidth estimate, right? We send some probe, RTCP probe there from time to time to measure the bandwidth. So basically, the sender and receiver, they both kind of know each direction that the bandwidth, right, all the parameters on the link. So the sender can react to that, right? You do not need a new invite. You do not need a new VSR to say, hey, my bandwidth dropped from, you know, 2 megabit to, you know, 300K, give me a new resolution. You do not need that because we are using the RTCP to tell us that. And we'll be very quickly allow the sender to react to that, right? You look at, okay, the link got changed. Like, for example, I'm in a very well connected Wi-Fi scenario, and then I walk out to the hallway, which is less, you know, coverage. Then quickly, even though I'm still asking for, I didn't ask for a new resolution, I didn't ask for a new frame rate, the sender knows that, okay, it changed. I'll send him something different, right? So this is one way we help. And also by sending a new resolution, right, it may be lower than the resolution that you ask for. Like, for example, you ask for 1080, and now you're on a lossy network, I send you like 6x4. Your screen still looks the same, right? Your window, your video window. But you suddenly receive 6x4. It won't change. It just stretch out to fill the screen that you have, right, so quickly. And also, the sender will determine by what resolution to send by. If you go to this link, it will show you that what's the minimum bit rate you need to support certain resolution or frame rate, right? And again, Jeff just has a pretty good, very, very nice blog to talk about, you know, how to compute all this thing together. So that's what happened. And remember, in Ling, we also have this thing called commission control, right? It's all about bandwidth, right? So how does it work combining with the effect of commission control? Well, commission control, again, is from the sender side, right? Before it sends to the bitstream to the receiver, it will have to combine, okay, you ask for this, right? You ask for 1080p, and you ask for 30 frames per second. And then I look at it, the CAC say you can only do 300K, right? 1080p requires 1.5 meg at least, minimum, right, if you look at the table. But since you only can do support up to 300K, and 300K, if you look at the table, is only 640x480, 6x4. So the sender will say, okay, I will give you 6x4 stream, right? And the receiver, you can ask whatever, you can ask for the best, but it depends on the CAC and it depends on the bandwidth situation. Sender will design the best stream to send over to the receiver. Okay, so this is what happened underneath to facilitate, you know, the kind of features that, you know, Mary show and the nice experience that we have with Link 2015. Okay, what's next is, Mahesh will come back and show how to plan for it, right?
Yeah, thank you, Danny. Mm-hmm. So what we've seen so far was like there are these great features of Link 2013 client which make the video experience kind of like robust and as well give the control to the user. Then I guess we, like Link product group, they did a really good job on implementing lots of technologies developing protocols that make these features possible. But there's a third part to it. And now we are going kind of like a, you know, we're going slowly into kind of like a lower layer of or lower level of the session. The third part is now it's your job to make sure that the video experience it will be great. Because there are certain things that we, as Microsoft, we have no influence over. You can get a good experience, best experience, or enormous experience, fantastic experience, depending on what type of hardware, what type of environment you would use, and that's what I'm going to talk about. So the first point I would like to touch upon is the hardware. Bottom line, no good hardware, no good video. Okay? What does it mean? Well, first of all, we have certain client requirements, video requirements for the clients, and basically, if you would be support providing like a one core machine, don't expect fantastic results. They'll be pretty good still. Give them like two cores. If you have a hardware acceleration in your desktop, that's even better. Then we probably will go like 1080p easily, right? Because the hardware acceleration helps to encode and decode stream, and your CPUs are not that much loaded. Now, the thing is, today's PCs are different. There are cheap PCs, better PCs, and those really, you know, very, very powerful machines. And you have to pick appropriately. I'm not saying pick always the best, but pick appropriately. Some people need a full HD experience. Some people don't necessarily have to have it, right? And you know, so make your conscious choices. The blog article from Jeff again. We are calling Jeff so many times. I hope he doesn't mind. But he gives you an excellent description that how to figure out if your current PCs that you currently have in your company, would they be providing good experience, best experience, or fantastic experience, right, from the video perspective. So it's about the hardware platform. It's about CPU, performance, GPU, graphical processing units, or video accelerators, if you wish. There are multiple combinations. But it's also about the operating system that you are running. There are certain dependencies there. Let me give an example. If you will be running Windows XP, well, you wouldn't be able to run the Link 2013 and also no experience from Link. But I'm doing the XP kind of, you know, to Windows 7 or 8, actually, because Windows 8 gives you the possibility to leverage those wonderful graphical processing units, GPUs, accelerators. Windows 7 doesn't necessarily provide ability to use the GPUs, built-in GPUs into the machine. So think about the Windows OS as well. Think Windows 8.1, even better. Now, about the other part of the planning of the hardware. It's about the real estate on the screen all the time. I happen to be lucky. I have a laptop that's running a full HD screen, 1920 by 1080p resolution. I chosen that one because it was quite good, powerful, and I wanted to experience full HD as well. If my laptop would be like many laptops are kind of like smaller one, the resolution of the screen could be something like 1300 by 700. I wouldn't be able to go full HD on these, right? Not necessarily, again, that there is something wrong with the smaller laptops. They are okay, except if you want to provide these guys with a full HD experience, then think about kind of like it has to have full HD screen, simply speaking, or something close to it. Now, the other thing about, it's not about the kind of like resolution of the screen. Sometimes, especially in an environment like when people collaborate heavily. Remember the video at the beginning? I was referring that video is not just about the video. We use video for the reason. And some of the reasons is like I want to explain better what this guy is explaining to me. So if I have a dual screen setup and I can go, my video is here, my desktop sharing or my PowerPoint presentation, whatever is here, then my video experience is going to be better because I have more real estate again because I just moved collaboration to the second screen. So for those like engineers, designers, marketing guys, like whatever, who needs to see the details on the video but at the same time see good collaboration, think about the dual screen workstation. That helps. That helps with a good or rather fantastic, to achieve a fantastic video experience. And then the camera. Well, that's a no-brainer. No HD camera, no HD stream, guess what, right? Or no full HD camera, no full HD stream, right? Think about that. Don't go, with all respect to I guess I'm not supposed to be calling names, but with all respect to many webcams of this world, cheap ones, $15 per piece. No, they are not HD capable. Keep in mind, go for some decent cameras. There are some Microsoft cameras, good ones. And some other third partners also produce excellent cameras. Some of them, by the way, they provide the acceleration for the video streams, which can help. Doesn't necessarily mean we have to have it. We can achieve HD or full HD without the hardware acceleration in the camera, but that helps. It helps to kind of relieve the pain of the CPU if you have to happen to be running in that kind of environment. And if you go to the TechNet, or actually to this page on TechNet, you will see there are some specifications which are unified for Skype and Link client nowadays, which is kind of interesting because meaning we are kind of like looking at the devices produced, cameras, and so on, in terms of they should be capable of providing good experience for both Link and Skype world. Okay, so now once you kind of took care of the hardware, you have a decent hardware to provide appropriate video experience for the user. Again, doesn't necessarily mean always full HD or whatever. Think about bandwidth. Of course, bandwidth is the kind of underlying need for the video experience. Bottom line, no enough bandwidth, no good video, right? Now, enough bandwidth is the important thing. What is enough? Again, Jeff will be called today. His session gives an excellent overview. What are the bandwidth requirements for the Link 2013? But the thing is, it's not only about the bandwidth. It's also about the coverage. Like if you would be using Wi-Fi, it's important that your coverage of the Wi-Fi signal is strong enough for you to be able to experience. Because if you try to make a cell of the Wi-Fi really, really big one, at the edges of this coverage of the cell, you will not get as good bandwidth as in the middle of the cell, like standing below the access point. So think about these things as well. I'm not going to go deeper into the bandwidth planning thing because there are lots of materials, just presentations there, bandwidth calculator is there. Think about these things. Again, interesting thing is the devil is not as big as you might think. So this is, I know it's kind of hard to see. So this is what we collected from our systems in Microsoft over a year. The point here is we are using video quite heavily. It's increasing. Now, the interesting thing is we are not using like HD or full HD all the time. We are more kind of like a reasonable consumers. Our employees are reasonable consumers on video. What does that mean reasonable? Basically, they don't need to go full HD all the time. They are fine, satisfied with kind of like a good experience. Not that necessary that we don't have a good laptops here. Hopefully, most of us have very powerful laptops. But the point is, some of people just joining video experience like Multiview Gallery, it's also due to the fact that most of this experience come from the Multiview Gallery. And we are good with the kind of like a standard way of seeing people in the gallery or for the peer-to-peer. We are not necessarily going for a high bandwidth video. Devil is bigger. The bandwidth devil is bigger than you think. Trust me on that. I've seen it, done it. All right. And the final thing. This is important. This is really important. And I really, really, really think that no matter what you do, about the bandwidth, and no matter what you do about the hardware that would be necessary for the good video experience, if your users are not willing to use the video, they will not be using the video. That's the bottom line here, right? So how do you make sure that they want to do the video? First, do not enforce the video. There are some companies or some approaches like, let's do every video meeting. If you try to force that, like, through the corporate policy, you will not achieve that because people will find ways to avoid the video. Well, the question is, why do I avoid the video? That's what I call cultural aspect. There's natural resistance of being seen from time to time. What we've done with this Link 2013 client, with all these features that give the control over the user, like a video preview, like not joining the video through the gallery instantly, right? We want to give the people the kind of like confidence that their video will be appropriate for the situation, right? The second point is to educate users about that. Don't hesitate to tell them that you can be comfortable in your video in terms of you will be seen in a professional way. Like, it's not about just quality. It's like you have a control over it when, right? The second point is, and that's where I'm kind of like going back to my discussion when I was saying in a smart framing section that background is not important. Guess what? Background is important. And in that cultural aspect kind of sense, well, not every environment is simply speaking suitable for the video conversation, and that's what we try to kind of like achieve by doing the smart framing, just to kind of remove the background, but still people might feel don't comfortable with doing the video like in an open space environment. Don't force them to do it. Instead, why don't you just to kind of like help them to go on video, just create a special video rooms. They can be video rooms with a like link room system or round table cameras, right? Or they can be just like the booths where you can people can go in a controlled environment. They can just run a video call, because sometimes in open space they will not go on video because they are afraid that some people might want to see whom you are talking to, right? If I'm just talking audio, I won't reveal who I'm talking to. But sometimes if I'm talking to someone else, I don't want my coworkers to see that I'm talking to like competitor. Now, the thing is, background matters, so remove obstacles as well, right? I use that example of my own quite often. I work primarily from the home office, and on a shelf behind me, I have a toy from my childhood, which is like a lion, a big one, big red lion, actually lioness. And whenever someone calls me on video, they make fun of me. Like, there is a lion behind you, and I know, right? But some people just don't feel comfortable with it. So, you know, remove obstacles. You know, just remove the lion, right? And of course, that's a joke, but the point is sometimes you have to take care of the environment in which you ask the people to do the video. And again, it's about the quality, not the quantity. Don't enforce. Don't force yourself others. Help them to find the value of the video, right? Start easily. Give them the options. When you schedule the meeting, don't be a manager that says, this is a video meeting, right? Just, if you guys feel comfortable, just join me on video. All right. We finally reached to the end of the session. I would like to just tell you that there are lots of sources you can pull from. Lots of great sessions at this conference. I already advertised Jeff's sessions too many times. There are lots of other sessions that go 300, 400 level on video. Well, this one, like for example, great source of information, I guess, I hope.
You can do it tomorrow again.
Yes, if you want to know more, we'll be doing it again. Maybe there will be different content in it. And obviously, TechNet, and there is a good Dex from the Link Ignite. There are lots of blogs and articles on video. And protocol specifications, if you are like 450 level guy, then go there and read them like Danny did. I did a little bit, but couldn't understand much. References, of course, there are lots of things on video, on media streams, how do you report on them. Monitoring for the video is important piece. And how to do the bandwidth calculation and all that stuff to make sure that your hardware and the bandwidth is appropriate. And with that, we reach the last 5 minutes, not 15, but 5 minutes of the session for the Q&A.
So I have some Skype limit thing, Skype minutes to give out if you ask good questions.
Yeah, we will be qualifying the good questions.
No, any question is good.
Like yes and no questions.
Now, we any were definitely asking. So if you could step into the mic, please, for the question. In case the mic doesn't work, then we will just repeat the question. But please step to the mic if possible. Thank you.
Is there any hope for us that use VDI in terms of getting gallery view and some other features?
Hope for the VDI. Yes, there is. So, okay, let me just explain the situation. The VDI client or VDI plugin, if you wish, right, that's running on a on your thin client doesn't necessarily have the things like the gallery view. And the reason for that is basically the thin clients usually do not have the power for having those multiple streams encoded or decoded, right? Hope, yes, we might improve these things. Will we do it? I don't know. I wish. I knew. Sorry. There is a hope always, though. Yes, please.
Thank you very much. That was a really great session.
Thank you.
My question is, on the sender side, is it encoding all the possible bit rates at the same time? So is it doing like your 1080p at 3 meg, you know, it's 240p. Is it doing all the time or only when it's requested?
No, only when, so do we encode all possible bit rate? No, only when you request it, right? So in a conference case, maybe there are multiple receivers out there, they ask different kind of resolution and frame rate, and we only get a combination of the best resolution and send encode that and send it to them, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
So when the VSR comes in,
right,
it's then that, oh, I need to do a 1080p stream, and then it just starts.
That's right. That's right.
Provided it can do it, of
right.
course. It's always a decision of the sender whether it will fulfill the request or not, right?
Right?
Because there could be different things that will limit it, like I don't have enough CPU for 1080p, like I don't have a camera, like I perhaps, whatever, call the mission control policy.
Right.
Sure. And are those thresholds, are you able to set those? So, like, don't go above this amount of CPU, don't do that. Because the reason I ask this is because, yeah, we've got a pilot 2013 deployment out there right now, and we're seeing in video sessions that we get really, really bursty CPU, and it gets dangerously high, and it starts kind of right. having effects on the rest of the platform.
I don't think we have a parameter for CPU. We do have a parameter for maximum qubit per second that you can send from the client. So.
But the question, I guess, was whether you can tweak with that. Like,
yeah.
No, you cannot. These are built in because we kind of figured out that we kind of know at which moment we should be kind of like jumping to other resolution or stuff. Now, these environments might not be optimal for all the environments, but yeah, well, the only thing that you can actually influence is basically to kind of set a cap in terms of bandwidth
right.
upon the client, right? That has been discussed multiple times during different sessions. I don't think I need to go into that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Give you a card.
Oh, yes. Oh, thanks, Danny. Okay. Next question, please. Yes, sir.
Are there any plans to embed text or anything into the image stream? Let's say copyright information, policy?
I wouldn't know, to be honest, because I'm not from the Link product group. We don't have that capabilities of today. You are welcome to use kind of like an external, what would that be, like a video mixer thing that would be USB attached, I guess, for that. That would be a workaround for today, but I'm not sure. No. I don't know, to be honest.
I'll put a background with your company logo.
So maybe I shouldn't be doing that because that wouldn't be a really recommended thing, but for certain situations, what you could do, there are some, let's say the software-based video solutions, if you wish, like virtual cams that can grab the image from the camera, then apply whatever, right? Like a text on it, merge it, and then you are sending it. That works, not necessarily the supported way, but yeah, well.
Yeah, but it's not a native Link solution.
Yes, it's not native.
Thank you.
We do provide, though, for the multi-view gallery, just to extend the answer, sorry, the ability to kind of like say, this is John Smith that's talking. That's probably, you know what I'm talking about. Like a multi-view gallery, we can show the name of the person. But if you are talking kind of like really embedding your logo, company logo on it, no.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Scott, think.
I'll give it to you.
So this is more towards the upcoming feature that Gurdip has actually mentioned. So does the logic apply the same to the Skype?
Oh.
Well, Skype at this moment, we announced only support peer-to-peer video.
Yes, correct.
Right?
But does the logic still happen the same?
That's a good question. I do not know how we do that.
I don't see the reason why there wouldn't be, but I wouldn't know at this point because we have just announced that, and if Robert can help out with that.
Robert.
So the question, I guess the answer is the yes. So these like VSRs apply because we wouldn't be able to do it. I just didn't want to kind of like go into the areas which aren't yet officially available.
Oh, yes, it does.
Yes, thanks Amit as well. So now we know for sure. Yes,
yes.
Sir. So I'll repeat the question, I guess, first of all, because of the capturing thing. And by the way, we are over time, so any of you who want to leave at any time is fine, thank you. So for the...
No, let's...
Hold on, let me just answer a question, please. you can leave as well. So basically, guys, with the video interrupt, it's kind of a longer story. I would be keen to extend the answer to that, but bottom line is, the capabilities in terms of resolution, everything depends on the video interrupt device. In this particular case, VCS, right? We cannot comment on this because it's a third-party vendor solution, which is not officially certified. I can't officially comment on that. Sorry. Guys, thank you very much.
Thank
I'm not
you
stopping
much.
You from asking questions. Please come to us for the questions. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll be here.
And have a great Link conference.
if you implement